Saturday Morning Math Group. We're very honored today to have Dr. Francois Bacciali here to talk to us about branching processes. Dr. Bacciali.
Okay, so can you hear me? It's all right?
Yes.
Okay. So thanks for the invitation. Antonio just left and gave a lecture a couple of weeks ago on probability theory, discrete probability theory. So we elaborate on that. I'm going to present it. And we will discuss branching processes. Why this choice? We'll explain why people started studying these processes in the 19th century and what is the current value of this type of processes rather than before. I start about that. And then we go to more math thing to describe the dynamics and to a certain of problem. So okay, so the story goes like that. So discrete probability theory was started in the 17th century in Europe primarily, and it's only way later that people realized it could be used to study population dynamics. So initially it was for things which were pertaining to games and very simple things, and population dynamics is something very important. The motivation of some of the early persons working on branching processes was for family names. People have observed, I mean, in Europe, as you know, so you have the family name coming from the father to the sons who are keeping the name, while the daughter would perhaps marry and change the name. And so people had observed that certain famous family name had disappeared because at one stage there were a few individuals with this name and there was no boy bearing the name, therefore the name disappeared. And so they were interested in trying to understand how this could happen and what were the mechanisms, the number of mechanisms through which names would disappear. And that was one of the early motivations, but later on, persons were interested in population dynamics. The population dynamics is about something very different, which has much more modern and abstract incarnation. So you may be interested in genetics. I mean, one individual has certain genes, and so maybe you may, this individual may be interested in learning through several succession of generations of progeny, whether this gene will survive or disappear. In species, this is the same. As you all know, species may disappear. And same thing, so it's at a more broader scale. You may be interested in learning whether a species will survive or disappear. And this is pretty much linked to randomness. All these things are linked to randomness. Why? Let's look at the family name story. So you start with, say, the simplest model with one individual, and you would look at all sorts of causes that might result in the fact that this individual, let's look at the name story, which is the one that I started with. So, well, you are a man with that name in Europe in the 19th century. First, will you marry or not? Well, depends on the lots of random things. Then, given you marry, will you have boys? Well, that's yet another random thing which is very difficult to predict. Then think of Europe of the 19th century, right? So, will these boys survive? Not here at all, it was before antibiotics, so people would die sometimes, and so it was. And then assume that they survive, will they themselves have children, and will the name survive? Okay, so it seems to be linked to things which are extremely unpredictable. I mean, whom you will meet, what progeny you will have, whether there will be disease or something like that. How can you predict, how can you do mathematics on any object of this type? And you can. This is amazing. So you can do mathematics on every topic, including this type of thing. Okay? Everything, as Pythagoras said, can be made mathematical. That's one of the things that I want to show through this example. Okay? It's quite bizarre and amazing that things which look so emotional, in a sense, you could not harness completely. You can't change the nature of randomness, but at least, as we shall see, you can understand what is the chance of certain events to happen, what is the dynamic that will, come from this randomness. And so that's the topic I want to describe. So I will start with concrete simulation. So yesterday night, I said I would prepare some small script for some small code, some simulation code, for you to understand what the problem is. Okay? And I will execute this code in a bit later, but let's look at this picture. So the aim is to explain what the model is, what the problem of this named survival is. And it's very complete, very simple. Everybody can understand it. Okay? So it goes first with, a dice. Okay? So you don't want to throw dice. And there is a random outcome. And this random outcome, for me, will not be from 1 to 6. I will take a special dice in this example, where the outcome are only 3. So it could be 0, 1, or 2. Well, you can think of a dice like that, and you throw that dice, and you get an outcome. And when you did a new random experiment, you throw the dice again, and you get a new one. That's it. Okay? So everybody can understand that. Okay? Fine. So now, I start from Adam at the bottom there, okay, on the left, and I throw the dice. Okay, so this initial individual, the one who bears the name in the motivation of this European mathematician, and so in that case, this initial individual has two sons. That's where we keep the story with the names, okay? Okay, so look at the right, to know how many sons this initial individual would have, I would throw that, right? And then the outcome is 2, this special dice with only 3 faces, okay? Look at the right closed sum. So again, I do the same thing, I throw the dice, and the answer is 0. Something happens. He has no son. Whereas the other son, the one on the left, has 2 sons. Okay? From again throwing the dice. And now I look at the 2 sons of the latter fellow. It's one on the left has no progeny, no sons, whereas the one on the right has 2 sons. Okay? And so on. But you see that on this trajectory, on this throwing of the dice, I get that the rightmost son that I was considering last has himself 2 sons, which is good, but the rightmost son has no son, and this fellow, if I look at the leftmost son, himself has 1 son who has no sons. Therefore, the name is this. It's an extension of the name, and this is a result of throwing the dice a certain number of times, and I get a random excursion, and on this trajectory of the dice, let's translate it, on this trajectory of the disease, of the war, of whatever, this name is extinct. Okay? Good. So, you can... So let's move to that one. So let's look at another problem of the dice and get that trajectory. So it's a more interesting one. So I will show a few trajectories that start with the same parameters. And the parameters are shown in the code here. So I look at 20 generations. I will order things by generations. Okay, so you have the initial generation, 0, at the bottom there. And then every layer is a generation. So the layers are going up on my slice. Okay. So this was generation zero. This is generation one. There are two individuals. Generation two has two individuals. Generation three has four individuals, and so on. Okay. So I rank things in terms of generation. And this excursion has the same parameters. I look at 20 generations, and this one at 20 has not yet disappeared. Has not the name is not yet extinct. Okay, at 20 generations, and so this is another throwing of the dice, and things up to 20 things have continued. Okay, the name has not disappeared. Although it's as you can see, there were interesting cases. If you look, I mean, way up at certain generations. It's very shallow, right? At some stage, there are only three individuals. Okay, so the name was almost close to perhaps with another throwing of the dice, it would have disappeared there. But there it did not, and it goes on. There was a bad thing again in terms of number of individuals up there, and it seems to be propagating well at around the 20th generation. Okay. And so on. So you can repeat this experiment. It departs from one individual, and you throw the dice, and you get an excursion like this. And so I have sorted things. So there are, of course, excursions which are very simple. Start with one individual. He has no progeny. That stops at one point. Okay, that's possible. Then there was this one with the same parameters. Huh? So you see what the P's are. Let me show it here again. So I take 20 generations, initial number is 1, P naught, which is the property that the dice give an outcome of 0 is 0.3, P1 is 0.2, P2 is 0.5. So I do my sampling of the dice and I plot. Okay, and I get something like that. Okay, so I repeat the experiment. I resample the dice. I get something like that, and so on. Okay, so these are the possible outcomes that when you repeat the experiment. Okay, and that was the story I told. So okay, when it disappeared. So this initial individual with this famous name had no progeny with his name. Therefore, they had disappeared. Okay, that's it. The thing can be disappeared. That's okay. Let's look at a few pictures. So mathematics is very experimental too. So you have a mathematical model and explain how we build it mathematically. But you can use, this is MAPLE, it's a fantastic code developed by the University of Waterloo in Canada. And you can implement an idea like this and do the experiments on this dice story and look at the small tree or the big tree that results from that. So it's something very experimental, and that's something that we do very easily. I did that yesterday night, using to show you what the experiment is. Let me look at show you a few trees, so a bit more dense. Okay, so I've sorted them by sort of density. There's this one where you think that things could have gone bad for that name around this generation, and also perhaps there was a bad event around there. Is a bit more dense tree. This one is 2-2. There are several critical events in this time too. This is yet another one, same type, and I go to denser one, so things have been more favorable on this excursion. So you see very dense trees up to, let's say, this one. So it's the same dice, right? Not the same realization of the dice, but the dice have not changed. So we see the same law. But since on this realization has things have been doing well, and the population is extremely big. Okay, so you don't even see the tree. I can't say even plot it. So many points and generation and 20 generations. Okay, so that's the story. Okay, so let's now that we have some motivation, look at what do we do in terms of studying this type of data. So I will elaborate on what Antonio presented 2 weeks ago. So I will only discuss, this is what I want to do, finite probability spaces with a little bit on what I'm called discrete, which is an extension might need sometimes. Then we look at integer values ordered by rows. And once I have that, I will be able to introduce branching processes at the mathematical level. And then in there we will use a tool which is called Walls Lemma. We will be able to discuss in 5 the quality of extension. Okay, so this is what I want to cover, and with high probability, we will reach this list. The quality of extension requires a little bit of analysis, and we'll introduce some ideas and perhaps of what how one handles. Okay, so that we have 2 hours. Good. So it should be okay. So let me start with the discrete points. So omega, which is a set, is a finite set. So omega is omega 1, omega 2, or 2 omega. Okay. And so this is the set of outcomes of the probability space. And with each of these outcomes, so I have a weight P of omega I, or I 1 to n. And this is a real number, P of omega I, like my 0.3 and so forth, which I had before. So these are real numbers. Okay. Let's say we only consider non-degenerate 1 from 0 to 1. And if I look at P of omega 1, P of omega 2, plus P of omega n, this should sum up to 1. Okay, so this is the set. And so, if I give,
why did you change this from less than equal to less than?
Well, let's see. If one of the q omega is equal to zero, it will never happen. So I just discard. Okay. If it's one, it's not very random because the others are zero. And so, well, we can look at the branching process where, for instance, all mass is on. Zero, it dies immediately. The one where all mass is on one. Then this fellow has a son, who has a son, who has a son. So the story is uninteresting. Right. So it's why I concentrate on that. But of course, it's valid that you could look at its way of building trees, which would, that will be deterministic tree if one of the outcomes is as weight. Okay. Okay. So let me. Of course, the typical example would be more of a die story. So we could have omega 1 is that the dice is the outcome 1, omega 2 says the die story, omega 2 is 2, for 2 omega 6, so here n equal to 6, here 6, okay? And each, for the fair dice, each of the omega I, would have weight 1 of 6. Okay. It's very important also for us to consider, for instance, the 2 dice game. Okay. Let's discuss the 2 dice game. So, I will sort omega 1, omega 2, and up to omega 6. So omega 1 would be 1, 1. So in this first coordinate, I look at the, I color the two games. There is a blue dice and a red dice. Okay? And in the first coordinate, I will give the outcome of the first dice. And in the second coordinate, the outcome of the second dice, right? So, okay? So, omega 2 would be 1, 2, I sort things there, up to omega 6, which would be 1, 6. Then I will have omega 7, which would be 2, 1, and so forth, up to omega 36. Okay? These are the all possible outcomes of showing two dice which have an identity, the red and the blue. Okay. Okay. So that may be my my probability space. Okay. And on that, I can put weights in each of the omega I. And I have a probability space. And on that, I can look at certain number of objects. Okay, so these objects that we define now are called random variables. But in a sense, so this is the, well, the probability space carries something which is very refined, which contains a lot of experiments, like throwing many dice. You remember in our story for the branching process, we have to throw very many dice, right? Because we will have to actually in this example we have how many dice to simulate what happens for k generations. Okay, so at generation k, you have at most 2 to the k boys with a name. I take the. Ethnocentric viewpoint that it might happen. So you would need 2 to the k dice to just be sure that you will be able to simulate what happens in the k generation, and you need all the earlier generations. So 2 for the third generation at most, 2 to the 2, 4 at most, 2 to the k to simulate. So you need all that, yes.
You said that you might need 2 to the k die in the k generation. Why can't you just reuse 1 die?
You will not, because you do not want something which I will discuss a little bit later, which is called independence. Mm-hmm. So assume you would throw only 1 dice, mm-hmm. and the outcome is 2. And then reuse these dice forever. Mm-hmm. Then it's like the sort of deterministic case which I discussed a bit earlier, mm-hmm. when answering a question of Pedro Father, which was that so if it is 2, and I know I have this initially as 2 progeny of 2, and I reuse the dice, namely the outcome of the dice. For the progeny, for each of the individuals, so then each one will have 2.
We're not reusing the die, we're using the value.
Oh.
Okay, so for me, a dice it is throwing the dice, right, and looking at the outcome. This is the outcome. So of course, I mean, you have to roll the dice once more. It can be the same dice, but you cannot reuse the same value.
Okay.
And this is something called independence. So it's a very good question, and we come to independence a bit later. Okay? But if you would use the same outcome of the dice, then you would find something completely degenerate, so completely wrong. So there is no randomness anymore. The randomness is discussed at the very beginning. And then you use these 2. If it would be 1, then it could be the story where everybody has 1 boy and it perpetuates forever. Okay? So. I didn't get the question, sorry.
So you need 2 to the k dice for 2 outcomes for every k?
So k was the generation in my discussion. So let's look at, for instance, generation 2. So generation one has at most one individual, exactly one individual, has at most two individuals, generation one. Okay? So this is the case where, in my example, where the initial individual has two points, okay, for the family name. Okay? So we can translate that. I mean, I'm sorry to be to use this example. It was initially like that. So of course, if you would take genes, then it would be symmetrical. So boys or girls, they have the same. So, but okay, just to exemplify. Okay, so what I say is that I need to understand what happens until generation one. I need the dice roll for generation zero, namely the initial individual, and I need at most two dice rolls for generation two. Assume now I want to go to generation one. Assume I want to go to generation two. There are at most four boys in generation two, so I need at most four dice rolls to go to be used at generation two. Okay, so how many dice rolls at most do I need to understand what happens in generation two? It is the first one, then the two for generation one, and then the four for generation two. That's at most I need. No, one dice for every person. We don't know how many persons there are in any generation. Okay, but what I say is that I need at generation two, for instance, at most four dice rolls. No more. It's impossible. Okay, and that will be important. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So this is the. Now let's discuss the random variables, okay? And I will only discuss what are called integer values. Random values. Okay, so this is x, and it is for every small omega I that belongs to every outcome of my Cauchy space. I have a function returns an index, positive index. Okay? So x of omega I is an integer. I use this notation for integers. Okay, so that's so let's look at, for instance, assume now I have my experiment is coin toss, okay, so assume omega 1, omega 2, so n plus 2, that I described here, and for instance, I may have that x of omega 1 is 0, and x of omega 2 is 1, okay, so if I get head, I will associate the numerical value 0, if I get tail, I will associate the numerical value 1, okay, and for instance, the coin is not completely deterministic, so we say t is 0, 1, and here for omega 2, we see 1 minus p, again, I'm the same. Okay? So this is the highest coin with probability p, p 1 minus p. Okay, and you see the random variable, so you have to distinguish between the random experiment, the random outcome, omega 1 of omega 2, which I would call here heads and tails, and the numerical value, which are associated to z. In the dice case, so that's the coin. If I look at the dice, then if I get the outcome omega I for any I between 1 and 6, then I will say it's of omega I is equal to I. Okay, so here, if I see the dice give the numerical value, right, the face that comes on top. Okay, so the interesting example for our purpose to understand what we will is the two dice example. 1 of omega will be the first coordinate of omega, and E2 of omega will be the second. So it's a fancy way of saying that I roll these two dice story, and there is a blue dice which comes from coordinate, the first coordinate, the red on the second coordinate. And I know what happens for the second one, just look at the first one. Okay? And maybe at the blue dice will be x1 of omega, which will return an integer. Okay? Maybe more precisely something that is an integer from 0 to 6, and this one also. Okay, so from the experiment space or the outcome space is much bigger because there is this two die story, and I just look at one coordinate and it makes a random variable on this Richard space. Okay. A very important notion, so you see that you have to decorrelate the random experiment and what you want to look as a function of the yes. You mean the coin story?
Yeah, and then the dice story,
okay, so you have to keep in mind that, so you have this set of outcomes. So for the coin, there are only two outcomes, which are S and S, okay? And you should put a number, a real number, which I call P of S, P of S, okay, to each of these outcomes. And these two numbers, they should sum up to one, okay? For the dice, what are the outcome space has six elements. Therefore, I have to find six numbers, real numbers, which are positive and which sum up to one.
Okay.
And I choose 1, 6. It's a fair dice. But my coin is unfair, the dice is fair. Okay? Now, for the two dice story, as we said, so there are six outcomes for the first die, the blue die, six outcomes for the second die.
Yes, I got that.
Okay, and therefore, you have a richer space, and this richer space is important because for our story, as I said, we will need not only two dice, but we will need, this was a discussion, a certain number of dice if you want to simulate roles, if you want to simulate K generations, we know how many. Okay, and then what will be the we cannot use all of these dice rolls, but we have to construct something on this on a space which has at least this information in terms of number of dice. And so it will be just a space like this. Okay. Fine. So let me now introduce something which is. Important. So I have defined random variables now. I will define the law of X. So the law of the random variable. So it will be, so X is, so it's a function of omega which takes value in integer, because the outcome is an integer, okay? And for all integer k, so k means 0 or 1 or 2, this is the numerical value that can be achieved. And so I have only looked for the time being at finite spaces and finite Cronenberg work, but you can make Cronenberg work also having all achieving all possible integer values. It's not difficult. So you will be interested in the quantity which I call Vk, which I will also denote as the quantity that x of omega is equal to k, which would be you will look at all omegas, omega I that belong to omega, such that x of omega I, the random variable x at omega I, achieves the numerical value k, and you will add up the weight of this elementary outcome, omega. Okay, and so what happens again is that you, if you, so are you familiar with this sine sum? Yes? Well, this sum is called sigma. Okay, rather than saying 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus k, I write some sum. Sum, or say I and g from 1 to k, of I. Okay, so I pass this, so it is a sum. The first term will be 1, then I go to the next term, it will be 2, up to the kth term. So it's a simple way of denoting c, and it's very useful in mathematics. Okay, so it's just a simple way of representing sum. Okay, so so for instance, for the let's look at the fair coin. So the fair coin, I have P0. Which is probably here, which is the weight here omega 1 and p1, which is here omega 2, so the fair point, the coin. Whereas in the dice, in the fair dice, I have p, pi is equal to p of omega I from I to p from 1. And again, so I do not look at the I do not look at what happens for here values. So what happens? What I can say is that p2 is equal to 0, p3 is equal to 0. It's linked to the question that you asked. So if you look at the random variable, so you may view it as taking its values in integers, but having for instance zero chance to. To achieve the value 2 functions. Okay? And what did we have in our story? We had exactly this, right? So we had we were throwing this dice with three faces, whatever it means, in our experiment, and we wanted numerical values which were 0, 1, and 2. Okay? And that was our random value. Okay? It was called the progeny, the typical progeny of our random variable. And so this is what we had in our case with our progeny story. So in our example, we had a random variable x, okay, and we had x of omega 1, we had n is equal to 3, we take x of omega 1 is equal to 0, x of omega 2 is equal to 1, x of omega 3 is equal to 2, and we have therefore numbers p0 plus p1 plus p2, okay, which were summing up to 1. And if I remember well, we had 0.3, 0.2, and 0.5 for the on the small code which I showed. Okay, so it's like the dice, but it's an unfair dice, and with only three faces, and all the other faces to 0. Okay, so this is all. Okay, so last thing is the expectation for the mean of x. That's what we need to understand our branching process. So mean value of x of omega. So x of omega is this integer value random variable of this space. And I'm interested in something that is very control P of X of omega, which I define like this. There are two ways of writing it. The first one is to sum over all K in the integers K and PK. And the other one consists in summing over all the omega I X of omega I P of omega I. And what I claim is that the two things are important.
Can you explain what those are again? Is it the average, the mean value, the average value of your
X
of omega?
Okay, so let's look at the first example before proving this formula. Let's look at the fair dice. Let's look at the fair dice. So we know that we have P of omega 1 omega I, which was 1 over 6, for I and link from 1 to 6. Okay? And X of omega I was I. Okay? So let's look, if I to see that we are doing things which are consistent, what is X of omega for the fair dice? Okay? So I sum, let's look at either formula, the first one, for instance. There will be actually 1 times 1 6 plus 2 times 1 6 plus et cetera until 6 times 1 6. Okay? And so, and here the two things trivially, I mean, obviously coincide. Okay? And so, this thing is 1 6 multiplied by 1 plus 2 plus blah plus 6, and this is 7 half. Okay? It's 7 half. So this is the mean value of if you, when you throw the dice, you have a return, which is the honorable X of omega. You throw the dice, and what one calls expected value of the unknowable X or mean value, the return that you can expect. You assume you would be given $1 if it's a 1, $2 if it is a 2, up to $6 if it is 6. Okay, and you want to learn what is the mean value that you can expect depending on when you average over all outcomes, and you get this thing. So this is the mean. Okay, so let's just check this formula more generally. Yep, question?
Yes. So if I roll the dice a million times, summed up everything across all the dice, all rolls, and then divided by a million, I would get roughly.
Exactly. So, yeah. This is one way of looking at it. And we do not use this type of things for the branching process. It has no time to enter this regime. You're perfectly right. This is indeed, we expect the mean when you have independent random variables is also the asymptotic empirical mean. Maybe you make many, many experiments. And you divide by the number of experiments, and it will converge to this mean. Okay, the empirical mean converges to definitely for independent from that. And I didn't tell you. Sorry. Okay, so let me discuss this for a second. So what I claim is that this is equal to that, and in this form for a reason that will become apparent very quickly. You probably know that when you have to add up numbers, you can do that in any order. You can make a first pack, do a local sum, then look at the rest, do local sum, add up the things, it's over. So sums you can do in any order, and you get the same result. Okay, so let's look at that. Sum of X of omega I here. So I will first do a sum of K K are all the possible values that x of omega I can achieve. Okay. So I will group this sum by looking at all those omega I such that x of omega I achieves the value k. Okay, this is my way of doing the sum in parts. So there will be a k. And then what shall I get? The sum of the whole I such that omega I such that x of omega I is equal to k, e of omega I. And this is a way of regrouping the sum. So look at this sum. The sum of all the outcomes. Okay? Now I will group all terms, I, omega I, such that x of omega I is equal to k. If you think of the, of course, in the you think perhaps of the one dice case, it's not so interesting. It's exactly, but if you think of the two dice case, and you look at the random variable x1, then it becomes interesting, okay? Because there will be many omegas in the omega 1 up to omega 36, whose first coordinate will be, for instance, 1, or 2, or 6, okay? And then we group them. We group them. So for all these omega i's, such that x of omega I achieves the value k, x of omega is equal to k. So everybody can say it. And then I group all these omega I such this property hold and look at the weight p of omega. So these two sums are the same. But this object is exactly pk. Okay? Pk is exactly this. Therefore, these are two ways of looking at the same object by grouping terms in either way. Okay? Okay, so that's this is the mean value, and as it's something very concrete, indeed, extremely simple, so you may think of it as in terms of expected return, numerical value, think of money. For each outcome, you have a return, and you look at the mean return, averaging of the probability of each of the outcomes. So something very concrete. And so what happens, and that will be central for our purpose, is that this expectation is linear. So what does it mean? So it's a lemma, it's a one-liner. Now, so if I get x1, x2, xk, which are integer values, so numerical, let's say integer values, and these random variables are defined on this space omega, okay? Then I have that the expectation of x1 of omega plus x2 of omega up to plus xk of omega is equal to expectation of x1 of omega plus last expectation of okay, so it is called linearity of the expectation. So who knows about what a linear function is? Okay, so a linear function, it is a function or a transformation. If you take numbers A and B, and you one of the requirements is that if we call this function f, is that f of A plus B is f of A plus f of B. Okay, that's linear. It's not enough, but it's necessary. Okay, and you see that this function capital E, when it operates on random variable, it is linear according to this lemma. And the proof is a one-liner. So the proof is a one-liner. So first, you have to check the correctness of the statement. I am discussing the expectation of something. I have already defined the expectation of integer valued random variable. Is the sum of integer valued random variable the random variable which is integer valued? It is. Why? What is the random variable integer valued random variable omega? It's a map from omega to the integers. If I give you a first map from the omega to the integers, second map, I add them, I get a random variable because it's a map from omega to the integers. Okay? So this fellow, z of omega, Alpha and Omega. Think of the two dice. I may adapt the outcome of dice one and dice two, and I get a random variable, which is the sum. And this sum is a random variable on my probability space that carries the two dice roll. Sorry. Okay. So this is an integer value. Therefore, I can apply the formalism. We still have the formula. What is the expectation of z for omega? And then we use, for the same purpose, that we use the second shape, is the sum over all omega I of z of omega I. More z of omega. This is the definition. Okay? And now I will write what z is. So this is the sum of omega I. The sum, say, sum of I, simpler. Sum. Now, I have said that z was itself a sum of random variables. So the sum from k ranging from say, L ranging from 1 to k. Of x L of omega I, p of omega I. Okay. So, well, on purpose I will not put the parentheses, but this is the actually what I do is this, right? And now I will use my property that we already used once, that sums you can make in any order. Which means that actually here, in that case, you can interchange the two sums. Okay? So it will be the sum over L, sum over I, of XL of omega I, P of omega I. But now look at this fellow inside. What is this? Yes, this is the expected value of xn of omega. Okay, so this is equal to the sum over L of expected value of xn L ranging from 1 to k, and the formula. Okay, so expectation is linear. Okay, so that's it. Now we have the why do I took some tedious and uninteresting. What is the clue to our problem? Let me know. I am in a position now to give you the. Perhaps I should just give the equation and we have a break, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let me know. Explain how I did the branching process, and you will see expectations of sums when we are interested in the dynamics, in studying what is called the mean dynamics. So. And we will use in a central way this small observation that we use. Okay? So now I can define my branching dynamics. So I need a probability space. And we already, thanks to one of the questions, discussed it. And so it was your question. We were asking how many dice rolls I really need to understand what happens after generation. So let's fix a horizon, 20, like in my case. And so I will have a probability space, I will now describe it, omega, on which I will have a certain number of random variables, which are all the dice rolls that I may need. Okay, so at generation one, I need only one dice roll, but I mean, I'm generous, I will take large numbers, so x01, x02, etc. I have that dice rolls for generation one, and we only use this one. Generation two, I have again three resources. So at generation two, I have x21.
1, 2. I'm not following. What is your x? Why is it 0, 1?
Okay, so I will have an index I, which is that of generation, and an index j, which is an index of individuals in the generation. Okay,
so why is it 1, 4? Why is the second 1, 4? Or that? It's a 2. No, I'm not putting you that to the left here. Yeah.
This one is the 1.
Oh, the 1. But okay, wouldn't there be potentially two people in the first generation?
Yeah, but so let me just also take. So indeed, what you might do is okay. Let's do the utmost two individuals in the generation, and here the utmost three, four individuals, so two is two, okay. And two, four, and so on. Okay. So, but I was lazy and put the dots not to. Get you more with an important details. Okay, and now what do I do? And so I do that. I mean, it is I do that for up to generation 20. Okay, you think that you want. That's it. So you have your you have all the dice rolls that I might potentially need to understand how to build the tree over 20 generations. Okay, and now I write the dynamics. So, main dynamics will be in terms of number of individuals per generation. That's the trick. Okay, so I call Z K of omega the number of individuals in generation K. So, I write Zk of omega, and so I'm saying that it will be randomizable on this omega space, but I will prove it in a second. So first I can answer Z0 of omega. So assumption is that initially there was one individual giving birth to this tree, and you look at the progeny of this individual, so that's for sure randomizable, so it's a deterministic one. Whatever the outcome of all these dice rolls, this is 1. Okay? This is 1 randomizable, which is deterministic. That's so interesting. Let's look now at the first interesting one. This is Z1 of omega. So Z1 of omega is actually X01. Okay, so this all these variables, so I should say, an important thing, all I j have the same say P0, P1, P2, on n. They will be assumed to be identically distributed. So it's my example, which I was simulating, was P0, the which were dice rolls with a special dice with three faces, if you can think of it. Okay, and with the outcome 0, 1, or 2, which was giving the number of the progeny of a typical individual. So I take all this triangular collection of dice rolls, if you want, and they all are based on using the same dice, not the same dice outcome, but the same dice. Okay? We don't care. Okay? And in addition, let's start the last thing I should say, but we don't need it at this time. I will assume something which I will discuss in the next class, which is called independence. That we assume that all these random variables are dependent. But we don't need it for the definition. So, what I claim is that starting from this individual at generation 0, I will call this random variable. I will roll the dice once, and this will be the first generation. So it's an integer. Okay. Now, what is Z2 of omega? That's the first interesting one. Yes?
Can you write omega? Isn't it for this first?
there is a finite number. I number them from 1 to whatever. Okay? And this is my collection of outcomes. That's all randomness that is in the system. Okay? And based on one outcome, like we saw the two dice on purpose, the two dice story was described on purpose, you could throw two dice and only look at the first one. So it's the rich for this space, and you can look at just its one of them. So omega is the set of outcomes of that I've not completely described of this triangular pattern of dice rolls, right? And a small omega here says, look at our example with 0, 1, or 1, 2, 3, which was gives me a numerical value 0, 1, 2. So it's a 1, 2, 3 here, cross a 1, 2, 3 here, cross a 1, 2, 3 here, cross a 1, 2, 3 here, blah, blah. Okay? So it's like the product space that we described for the two dice wall. Okay? That's the thing. So that's an omega. Of course, this omega, for a given omega, I know what the value of x01 of omega will be. Okay. So, and now I go in the same way, and that's where the random the sum shows up of random variables. Okay, I claim that what I should have is the sum from j until from 1 to 1 of omega of x 1 j of omega. Okay, so let's look at it. So we have one individual. It gives birth to a certain number of individuals. Okay, let's say 2. Assume that z1 of omega, which is also x01 of omega, is equal to 2. What is the number of individuals? Next generation. Okay, so I have to sum up the progeny of this fellow and the progeny of that fellow. Maybe I have to do a sum of z1 of omega random variable. It's a bit more complex, and that will be the small difficulty to play with. It will be a sum of random variables. And what are these random variables? This is the progeny of the first sum of the initial one. Okay, so this one is going the first sum, so it gives birth to x1, one number of individuals, and this two, the second one, gives birth to x1, two of omega individuals. So they have to sum up these two integer numbers to get the total generation, the number of individuals in the second generation. Okay? Right. And so on. That's it. Because more generally, for all k, I will write k plus 1 of omega is the sum from j and e from 1 to k of omega of x k j of omega. With the convention, so there is something weird here. So assume, for instance, the thing dies at generation in generation to be that ck omega is equal to 0. This is the thing that is the name of it. What is the sum from 1 to 0? By definition, it will be 0. Okay? So with the convention, that sum from 1 to 0 is 0. Okay? And so what I'm just saying through this equation, which we'll study next, is that we can put our hands through a simple equation which sums up random variables to learn what is the size of the population at generation k for all k by playing this recursion. If I know zk, if I know the number of individuals at generation k, then I sum up zk terms which are zk or dice holds with the same law as I explained. I add them up, I add this one over one, and gives me the size of the population that generates k plus one. Once I know the number of individuals generating k plus one, I go on. I apply this exactly the same formula for k plus one, I get generation the number of individuals generating k plus one. And so on. That's it. So we have reduced the understanding of what happens in story of the progeny of the initial individual, the global progeny of the initial individual, to summing random variables, which are those that show up in this table, which have all the same law on the integer, according to this type of recurrence relation. And that we'll study that in the next slot, and get an understanding of what happens in the sequence. Okay, so let's stop here, and I'll be back.
So go ahead and enjoy some coffee and bagels, and we'll regroup in 10 minutes.
Yeah, you can make that.
Like general idea of what he's talking about.
In a sense,
you're adding up random number of random variables. Because you don't know what the previous generation, how many of them are. But for each individual of the previous generation, they each, you don't know how many like kids they were. So that's something that's going to make the difference.
Since the outcome is
since this person could have either no children or one children or two children, in the next generation, or if they're one generation or one, there could be one person, the first child, and there could be a second child. So there could be generation. And each of them is going to have generations. Well, it's not the total number, it's how many person is in that generation. It's the potential. So, this is a function that enrolls for the gender of starting the person.
Can be zero.
And this is going to give you a zero, a one, or a two. That means if it's a zero, you don't have to roll this because there are no. But if it's a one or a two, it could be zero. He could have one child, in which case he would have first generation child one. Or there could be first generation child two. There could be two. One child or two.
It
was
even this one.
But it could be one of those things. It's nothing for one or two. So these are the potential roles of the disability that count. And then each of these, assuming that there are two children, potentially each of these could then have, so we'll make a roll to have either zero or one or two. So there could be two children from this person, and there could be two children from this person. So you have to account for the possibility of but then these are then the results of the die roll for that. The average value of the function.
So all the whole one of us at the second generation
is
the number of kids.
This is certainly expected. That doesn't just turn on second to
and then so on.
The sum of all the outcomes.
So it's the same thing.
So you
include the average.
Which depends on what they're saying is that
we build it like this.
If you take all the outcomes,
and now you're just summing up
and pulling all the
unfair value. Right. And now you're just summing up.
If you look at the possibility, look at all the outcomes of rolling one die, it could be a one, and two, and three, and four, and five, or six.
Or one, and a one, and a zero.
I'm not talking about, as an example, I'm not talking about the generation, but I'm talking about an actual fair die or something. Or one, two, or three.
Does it make more sense?
So if you do the, if you add up all the outcomes, what this is saying is it doesn't matter whether you take all of the expected outcomes and add them all up, and then multiply by the probability. Or if you take the probability of an outcome is
the middle that
you either add up all the possible outcomes.
Figure out how long
the sum of all the potential outcomes. second generation.
Hey, Sean.
So my graph is small.
Well, it's a learning experience for you. Compared to them, yes, extreme marking out there is fun.
Would you take probably?
I took one from Cervo and two from Gordon.
Switch.
Yeah, which I think it would be a nice way. Well,
Yeah, they will teach it next semester.
Trooper's test is always tricky. There's always one problem, so a few problems that you don't get the trick, you can't get it.
But even though Trooper's test is really good, Martin is gifted, so the best in terms of lecturing.
See, the nice thing about Gordon's class is you get the lecture notes, right? So you get an idea of what's going on in class, and you go read the lecture notes, and you strengthen your understanding, right? The good thing about Serpent is he writes down everything he said on the board. So you just have to write down everything he writes on the board, and you can understand it.
Is equal to the quantity that x1 of
understand what the different equations are saying. And one is the probability that x of 1 is q1 and x of q is 2q and x of whatever, x of k is qk.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is that all of those things are happening.
Symptomatic.
Right. But what is the connection between the probabilities on the bottom one? I guess I missed that. The probability of x1.
Yeah, so this is an assumption. Not all random variables are independent. I would say that a collection of random variables is an independent collection. If so there are k random variables. So I look at the set of omegas. You remember, we were on this discrete space. There was omega 1 up to omega n. N was supposed to be very big. Okay. So it could be a large number of dice rolls. And I look at the set of these small omega i's at which I have this conjunction of events,
right?
Okay, there is a certain number of omegas which I describe this, right?
Right.
And my requirement, the definition of independence, is that this random variable x1 up to xk, which live on the same point of the space, are independent if for every tuple of integers q1 up to qk, they have this property that the point of the conjunction of this k event is the product of the point of the
product. That's why I just wasn't sure what was combining them to multiply by.
Okay.
All right, I got that.
Okay. So there is a first homework for you is to prove that in the two dice random experiment, I have a printed version of the homework for those who come to do it. For the two dice experiment, x1 of omega and x2, which I gave, x1 of omega and x2 of omega are independent. It was defined, remember, the two dice all, and based on type dot, we defined the first coordinate, the second coordinate, and the thing is that these two, and you have to check it, so it's not difficult, but this is the negative. And so that's the notion of independence, and it was discussed with me 2 weeks ago. Okay, so now, I should add my assumption to study the boxing process, which is the one which we already used. And we will first prove a lemma, it's called Wald's lemma, which says the following thing. I give myself x1, x2, and t, which are independent random variables. Integer values and with all its I with the same law. All the side of the same note. So Wald's lemma says that if you're in the independent case, namely if t, the key thing that you see here is that you sum a random number of terms. Okay, so what we learned by linearity of expectation, we learned that if I sum, I take L, which is deterministic, L an integer, okay? Deterministic. If I sum from k from 1 to n the xi, which are given there, this is L times e of x, where n x is equal to 4. So that's what we call by the linearity. But now, the catch and the beautiful question solved by Wald is that if you sum a random number of random variables with the same law, and the second, the number of terms that you sum, is independent of the x, die, then you get an analog of the formula that we got there. Simply, you get the expectation of one of it times the expectation of this t. Okay. So we'll prove it. But this will be the clue to understand what we saw, namely the exponential growth of the mean under certain assumptions of the number of individuals in generation k. You look, this was the picture which I showed you that way. Now I put it that way. I look at number of generations that goes in this direction. And you see, so on this trajectory where the name has not disappeared, where the thing has is the progeny is not zero, then actually what happens is that, as we shall see, the mean number of individuals in generation k grows like an exponential function with a positive parameter more than one. And we will exactly solve this problem. And this is the exponential growth that you see on this curve under certain assumptions. Okay, so we'll explain which one in a second. Okay, that's the aim. So let's prove it before going to the application. So the proof is simple. And it leverages, so let's call z of omega the sum. K from 1 to omega. So I claim that this is a random variable. This is the same type of argument that we had before. Okay, and you remember that the expectation of z of omega
is going to be sum omega over x k. Now is it k? It's a k. But right, that's k.
Right? Yeah.
Here. Right.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. So that I should not use K now here. Let me use J here because I want to reserve K from the value space. So J. Okay. Sum of K of the probabilities at Z of omega equal to K times K. Okay, so this is one of our problems. Now, let's look at this fellow, probabilities at z of omega equal to k. I will represent it as the sum over L of the probabilities at z of omega is equal to k, and t of omega is equal to L. Okay, so t of omega takes one value. We don't know which one. But I will spell out all the possible values that it takes. It makes a partition of omega to a certain number of regions. There is a region where t of omega is equal to 0, the region where t of omega is equal to 1, and it makes a partition of omega. So I can write this. And now the beautiful thing, once you have spelled out things that way, is that z of omega simplifies. Because this will be the sum over L of the probabilities that, so now what is, since this thing is L, okay, if I know that T of omega is equal to L, the T of omega, which I see in the sum there, becomes L. Okay, this is also sum, and I will only sum L positive. The convention that k changing from 1 to L of this I j from 1 to L if j is omega is equal to gamma to k and q of omega is equal to L. Okay? Since I am on the comma here represents that the theorem is equal to the end of the two things, I can replace the term T of omega, which was there, by the constant L. L is the limitation. okay, I know it's good. Not good because now I can use independence. Once I have said what T over omega was, a given L, then what do you see? You see it's J here and T, and they are assumed to be independent. So this is the problem.
Sum of L positive of the probability that the sum of for J and L of J of omega is equal to K times the probability that T of omega is equal to T. Okay, and we are done, sort of. So let's now plug in this thing. Okay, so this thing is the sum over K of K times the sum over L of the probability that T of omega is equal to L times the probability that the sum from J function from 1 to L of the EJ of omega, the sum is equal to T. Now, what I do, again, sums I can do in any order. I swap the sums. Okay. It will be the sum over L. There will be the probability that T of omega is equal to L. And then there will be the sum over K of K times the probability that this sum from J ranging from 1 to L of J is equal to T. And what do you recognize into the inner sum? And what is each term? It is the same because they are the same law. So therefore, this is the sum over L of the probability that T of omega is equal to L times E of X, which is the best sum. You pull out the E of X and you get the sum of L probability that T of omega is equal to L, which is E of X. Okay, so we proved it. We proved it, and now we can apply it to our recursion. So we can apply to recursion and understand the exponential growth. So let's look at the recursion. So what the claim is that I look at this equation. So Ck plus 1 of omega is the sum from J ranging from 1 to K of omega of the x kj of omega. Okay? Now, what I claim is that this random variable and this one are independent. Do you see why?
So which variable?
Zk of omega and the x kj are independent, so that I can apply the Wolf's lemma. The reason is that, think of the recursion. So, what I claim is that, if you look at that, you see that, I mean, zk is a function of the dice rolls up to generation k minus 1. It's a function of all dice rolls up to generation k minus 1. And now what I said is that the dice rolls of any generation actually are independent. So if I look at the dice rolls for generation k, they are independent of all dice rolls before, and these dice rolls before they generate the ZK. So this fellow is independent of this collection. Okay? Therefore, P of ZK plus 1 of omega is equal to P of ZK of omega times the omega. Let's call this thing A, and I get the medium corollary is that P of ZK of omega equal to A ZK of omega. Okay, so you start with an induction, you start with generation 1, so mean is 1. Generation 0 is 1, generation 1 mean is A, which is the orbit. And if you apply this recursion, you get to get what you get at next generation, if you know already the mean at generation k, you multiply by a. Okay, therefore, this holds true for all k. And that's it. You have explained that. So if a is more than one, so you can already understand lots of things. Okay, so if a, there are two cases. If A is more than 1, then you get that P of ZK of omega is equal to AK, which goes to infinity. So if you take a number, A, which is more than 1, you multiply it by itself, you get something that goes so-called exponentially, goes to infinity extremely fast. Try this with the number A is equal to 2, for instance, and you see both extremely fast. Okay? And this is what happens, okay? With the caveat that which is interesting, that it may be that the thing has died. But nevertheless, this is weighed out by compensated by the fact that if it survives, then it's extremely big. Extremely big. Of the order, A to the K, where A is the expectation of X. Typical, that's the mean progeny. Okay, so in words, now we start having interesting conclusions. In words, if the mean number of the progeny of the typical individual is more than one, then it may be that the name will die, that the genes will disappear, the species will vanish. But if it survives, okay, I think you just look at the mean number will go exponentially to infinity. Okay? And if A is less than 1, namely, if the mean number of sons of this fellow wants his name to live forever, if the distribution says that the mean is less than 1, in my case it was 1.2, the mean, in the simulation, in the plots, okay? Because I wanted sometimes to have this type of behavior. Then it's the other way around. P of ZK of omega is also A to ZK, but it goes to zero exponentially fast. Okay? As K goes to zero. So then the mean number goes to zero, and actually you can show that, let me now introduce extinction and give a statement about extinction. So first, we can look at, for instance, in this second case, let's say A less than 1, you look at the total progeny. So you look at the implication of Z0 omega plus 1 of omega plus 2 of omega plus blah. So now I'm starting doing fancy things, I'm summing infinite sums, okay? Because this tree might you don't know when it ends. It ends at a random time. So that what will happen is that, as you know, if ZK of omega is equal to zero, then at it dies, but ZK plus 1 of omega is equal to zero. This is the convention. That the sum J1 to 0 is equal to zero. Okay, so, it's just consistently saying, if the name has disappeared, it has disappeared. control the generation and not change anything to that, right? The species has disappeared. It has. Okay? So let's look at that case. You sum up, actually, you look at that thing. Of course, I mean, we are not in the case A less than 1, we look to RBC, anything like that, okay? But you look at the total progeny now over all generations. You start from one individual and you ask how many individuals bear the name until the end of time. And the similarity of expectation, I have no time to prove it, but extends to any sum, any given sum, so it will be sum over k ranging from 0 to infinity of p k omega, which is the sum of k ranging from 0 to infinity of a to the k. And some of you might know that if you sum up what's called this geometric series, a is a real number now, which is less than 1, it is convergent. And this is 1 over 1 minus. Okay, so the total progeny, if a is less than 1, the total number of individuals which bear the name has an expectation which is finite. Therefore, this number is finite. The total progeny, the total number of individuals bearing the name is almost surely finite. It has this mean 1 divided by 1 over 1. Which means that the population of the name is extinct with probability 1. It will be extinct with probability 1. Extinction is certain. If A is less than 1, if the mean number of the progeny of an individual is less than 1, this population will die in any case. You don't know when, you don't know how, but it will die. That's what this theorem says. Okay, so whereas if A is more than 1, perhaps the population will die, there is a chance. And actually, I will give a theorem which expresses the probability of extinction in a second. But there is a chance that it will survive forever. And actually, if you look at just the mean number, when A is more than 1, goes to infinity exponentially fast. OK, so that's sort of a broad picture. Let me say one word on the probability of extinction. So the probability of extinction is based. A is less than 1, so it's good. It's simple, but I mean, it's already an answer. So to the concern of these fellows. So if the mean number of your progeny is less than 1, whatever distribution, whatever you do, your lineage will be extinct with certitude, with probability 1. That's quite deep. Okay. Now, what is the broad picture? I have no time to go into it. I wanted to do the probability of extinction. That if A is more than 1, maybe the mean, if your mean progeny inside is more than 1, then there is a chance you are extinct, nevertheless. Okay? It's just, I mean, as soon as you put mass to 0, well, you, as we have seen, you take the first individual, you roll the dice, answer is 0. That's it. It's for you. Okay. Yes. Ah, that's a good question. I will not answer this question. Well, in mathematics, there are good cases and there are things which are called critical cases. And so, the case A less than 1 is called subcritical. Okay, so the population will die with certitude. Okay. Or it's used in chemistry or in physics, in nuclear physics. I mean, some chain reaction will stop with certitude. Okay? If A is more than 1, then the population explodes, or the reaction with certain positive probability will have this exponential loss, okay? Which you can also see what it means in nuclear physics. Yes, let me first finish answer the question and then I'll get you. Let's look at certain cases when A is equal to 1. And again, so it's the case we already discussed. The progeny of this fellow has cardinality exactly 1. Okay, you have one sum, we will have one sum, we will have one sum, and that's it, right? So, of course, in that case, the name will proceed forever. it's quite easy to see that now if you can hook up cases, well, it will be extinct within 1 week. Okay, so it becomes very special, and so it's called a critical case, and it's much more difficult to study because there are no general rules. You have to look at cases and so on. Sorry? They are classes, but I mean, it's much more difficult to understand what is going on. So typically, let's ignore the critical case and look at big regions where you have a fair understanding of what is going on for the finding of the beam. Now, your question.
So, is there any mean number of children that would guarantee your means of surviving?
No. Okay. As soon as you have mass to zero, so if you have no mass on zero, then if you are certain to have at least one child who will bear the name, then of course, that's fine. But as soon as you put mass on zero, it's tiny, tiny. It just, I mean, you roll the first dice, and the answer is zero. That's it, the name is okay. So, I mean, you have the answer in your hands, right? It happens very early. When it starts being big, things have stabilized, it does not die, it explodes exponentially. But initially, everything can happen, because these are small numbers, and you roll a few dice in the wrong way, and that's it, the thing is okay, right? And you probably know, our species, mankind, at one stage had about 40 individuals. So it's a substitute. So we know that human beings, by some genetic traces, they come from a period like this thing that we have seen where it becomes very strangled, right? There are very few individuals. It could have been that this species would have disappeared. Okay? So these things are very very concrete, and so for small numbers, anything can happen. Then when it grows, things are different. And that would be a homework for you to understand. But there is no guarantee. You cannot guarantee, unless there is no mass at zero for the progeny, that survival will take place. What you are sure of is whatever you do, if the mean is less than one, then the population will die. That's the only certainty. Okay, so I think I'm done with my time. So let me say a few words on the only remaining question, which was the probability of extinction in case A is more than one. So I wanted to do it. I said that I was not sure I would reach it. But I proved all what I said. right? So now I can indulge myself into something for a good time. So, we look at some object which is called gx of u, which is called the generative function of the progeny size. And the definition of that is that gx of z, so z is a real number, z 0, 1, is equal to the expectation of z to the x of z. So you exponentiate, you take a real number between 0 and 1, and you exponentiate it by taking this common power of it, which is e to x of 1. Okay, it's a good function.
It's the notation. So it's the notation. Z or of t.
Z to the
that's the
limit.
Okay.
It is also the sum of all k of pk z to k. So it's if k is bounded, in all cases it would be like a polynomial. Okay, polynomial with self as the dice one sets the beam of degree 6. Okay, that's it. Okay, and the theorem which I wanted to quote says that the probability of extinction if a is more than one, the probability of extinction which is defined as the limit as k goes to 0 to infinity of the probability that ck of omega is equal to 0, and this will be a decreasing sequence and therefore this limit will exist, is the smallest, is the unit solution
of the equation GZ GX of Z is equal to Z in the 0-1 domain. And this is under the assumption, of course, that P0 so this is your question. So if the unless you are sure that survival takes place, because you know that you have at least one individual in your progeny, then as soon as P0 is positive, if A is more than one, then you can assess what is the chance for the name to survive or to disappear by solving this equation. And there is a unique solution of this equation in the 0-1 interval. And so you can not only have this type of exponential growth, but you can harness, you can understand what is the chance that the name will survive, given that this chance is not one, whatever you do. Okay? And so one of the homework for you is to compute this Poisson extinction, this solution of this equation, in the case that we looked at the beginning, which was, you remember, where the g function was a polynomial of degree 2. And so I guess some of you know how to solve the equation of degree 2. We'll be able to find the polynomial equation of degree 2, zeros of polynomial of degree 2. And so we'll be able to find the chance that the things that we looked at would be extinct or survive. Okay. That's it.
Any questions?
I have a question, actually.
Yeah.
So we don't see names disappear like that easy. Like, you have some kind of equilibrium in real life. You know, there are usually some type of people that have names like that, the names go on. So it doesn't seem to fit the model exactly. So which one of the assumptions is not satisfying real life?
Yeah, so thing is that indeed, so I think it depends on country, because names are sometimes names of clans or names of, there may be a common ancestor, and maybe in a situation like this one. But I think when people were interested in this question, they were looking at very uncommon names of somebody who had been famous because his ancestor and William the Conqueror of time did this or did that, and this name was still there, and then suddenly disappeared. Okay, these were very uncommon names, and so that was the. If there is one individual bearing this name, then there are this situation. What will happen in the future? There are countries where names of family names are more like a name of a clan or a name of a group of people, of a folk. Kinsmen of some kind, and so then it's another story. Okay, but I think for the initial preoccupation and the gene story, it's quite clear. So you're interested in learning whether your gene will survive in this sense or not, right? So the extinction, it doesn't mean that. I mean, it's your genes exist by some other people who are like your brothers, your uncle, and so forth, and it might propagate another one, right? But the notion of your progeny in a genetic sense makes full sense, right? And so this name story should not be taken too seriously. But the initial motivation, well, not quite initial, because the first one who looked at that was not the one working on the names, and so he had different preoccupations.
Let's thank Dr. Bacciari again.
So I encourage the young persons to simulate this type of thing. It's very easy to do. And you might even display things better if you want pictures and homeworks. I prepared some.
Yeah.